Good morning! This is Michael Albright from Down in Front, and you are listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'll see you in the future.
Good morning! Welcome to Too Much Scrolling for January 16th, 2018. I'm Steve Fodor.
And I'm the Snowman.
We're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. And if you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. This week, boy, we had spring for a day, didn't we? That was a fun day of spring.
Yes, but I brought it back quickly, Steve.
Oh, man, it iced over and the school districts canceled everything. They said, ice is coming. Everybody get home now.
Then it warmed up just enough to melt all the snow.
That's right.
To have it freeze to ice the next morning.
And now we have no snow. We just have dirt. We just have mud out there. It's frozen mud.
Frozen.
Frozen mud.
Very cold.
Welcome to the Midwest. Here's your frozen mud. I tell you.
The frozen mud becomes grass seed, Steve.
That's
or grass
right.
Later on.
Or it comes in the house when the dogs get in it.
There you go.
Those are my options.
Film at 11.
Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. You have been out there using your time and watching some great movies. You got a chance to see a movie that we talked about last week that we said was probably going to be one of the great movies of 2017. It's Molly's Game. Tell us all about it.
Steve, this is a movie about a person who set up a poker game.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a fantastic movie. And in fact, this is right up with 21 from a few years ago with Kevin Spacey about the book Bringing Down the House.
Mm-hmm.
This is the true story about a young person who was an Olympian who was injured and ultimately had to find her new way in life. She was postponing going to college, maybe graduate school, maybe law school. And she went to L.A., was kind of hanging out, trying to find herself. She got roped into running a poker game for the local office.
In Las Vegas, right?
No, Los Angeles.
Los Angeles.
That's right, California.
One of those losses.
That's right. The Angels, Steve. The Angels.
Okay.
Anyway, she was very successful at doing it. She eventually set up her own way of doing this. Eventually, the mafia got involved. Eventually, the feds got involved. And this is her story. This is an incredibly good cast. When I saw it in the theater was packed, and this was a weekday. Everyone enjoyed it. This is a grown-up film,
mm-hmm.
in the sense that you certainly are not going for the popcorn. You're going because this is going to be a little stimulating. And what a beautiful, beautiful story. And I highly recommend it. This is probably the best film I've seen in the last year or so.
So this might be, if we were doing our favorites of 2017 list right now, this might be on your list of the favorite movies of 2017.
Absolutely. This was a fantastic film. I would say on a 100-point scale, probably 85, 90.
Wow.
It's a good film.
That's a pretty big endorsement from you.
Well, I think that I'm over the popcorn film right now.
Okay.
I'm over the big bust. Blockbuster right now.
Okay.
I need something that's a little bit more, and there's a lot of good stories here, and it's got just a beautiful cast, and it's about integrity. It's about holding your promises. You know, one of the things that ultimately comes out of this is that she has all of her hard drives from all of her computers, and they want her to turn those over. And she goes, I can't turn those over. And she says, well, why can't you turn them over? It's got a whole bunch of names. It will destroy people's lives. Well, that's the reason why the government wanted those. And she said, well, I'm not giving it. You can force me to give them to you, but I'm not going to hand those over to you.
Wow.
There is an honor code on working with people on things that they don't want you to know, others to know about, that you need to adhere to.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately she, there's a result of that, it gives you the feel good ending. And what can I say?
Nice.
As much as it can be. She's an incredibly smart person. She, got involved and built something. She's surrounded by high achiever brothers, and I think this was a fantastic film. I think this is something that many people will enjoy. In fact, our listeners should consider going to see this.
Nice. You also got a chance to see a documentary called Dark Star. This is H.R. Geiger's world. We might know H.R. Geiger from the Alien movies, that big xenomorph that comes out and gets you.
He's the artist who created all these.
Yeah.
And he's got a very distinctive look. If you've seen the Alien film, you know what that is. Mm-hmm. Lots of sexuality put into it, but right. Wrapped in sort of a robotic look to it. Lots of curves and all sorts of things.
So what was this documentary all about?
Well, first of all, Steve, it's in a foreign language.
Okay.
So we should know that I had to read this.
All right. So this was a reading assignment.
It was a reading assignment.
It's in Swiss German.
The other thing I want to say about this is this was also the reason why I had Netflix DVDs, which in the past they would send you Blu-rays or DVDs depending upon the movie that you were looking at. And they have an entire library of things that you just can't get streaming.
Mm-hmm.
And so this was part of my list.
This is maybe one of your last ones, right?
This is my last one.
Oh, wow.
This is my last one. And this is because I canceled it to buy MoviePass, which we'll do a review of a couple shows from now. But anyway, Dark Star is about his life. He passed away shortly after this was released. He is an artist. There are a couple bars that use his styling points, and his styling points are very intricate. The colors that you use are very metallic and dark. And I mean, just what can I say? He was a very fascinating person. We learned that he was a hoarder and that everyone worked around him. I mean, they basically had to go and they had to fish the stuff out and kind of put it in order. He had a whole career worth of stuff that was available to him.
And he had it all in the house.
He did, but he didn't have a curator to put it together.
Mm-hmm.
So he does now.
That's what's happening with Frank Zappa's house right now, too. He had so many pieces of footage of video and audio that now they are curating through.
Well, that's what's going on. He built a little roller coaster through his house.
There you go.
Silver
spoon style.
And the deal was, if he had extra money, he used it to build and sculpt.
Wow.
And so that's how he knew that he had a little extra money. He had a staff working with him. They talked about the people who he inspired. There's heavy metal musicians who came back. They're working with him, interestingly enough. He put together a staff to respond to requests from the movie studios. Just a fascinating kind of look into this guy's life. And like I said, he's no longer with us. Once again, very interesting film. I would say this is in the 60 out of 100.
Okay.
I would recommend it for anybody who has interest in looking at the lifestyle of an artist.
Nice. I got a chance to see My Next Guest Needs No Introduction. This came out on Netflix on Friday. This is the next David Letterman show. This is David Letterman on a stage interviewing guests.
Yeah, but Steve, he doesn't have Paul Schaefer with him.
And that is mentioned in this, that was pointed out by the guest who he had on the first episode, that being one, Barack Obama.
So Barack Obama is the first interviewed person on the new David Letterman show.
Yes.
And it streams on Netflix.
Yeah, this is on Netflix. And the interesting fact, we talked about this last week, this is a monthly show. They are putting out this one episode of this show, and they will not release another episode until February.
And we learned the second one's going to be
George Clooney.
There you go. George Clooney.
He's very handsome.
It is very interesting that they are only releasing one show a month. And this may be the first big interview with a Barack Obama since he's left office that I'm aware of.
It's the first one that I'm aware of. So this is a very interesting conversation with two people who just left maybe the biggest job of their lives and sitting around talking about, hey, what's life like now that you don't do that job? And they're in very similar places in their lives.
Yeah, but Barack Obama didn't grow a big beard, did he?
No, he didn't. No, David Letterman's beard is ridiculous. Everybody who sees it goes, really? That's you walk around like that now?
He's got the big Santa beard. And it's like white and...
Yeah.
Oh, it's crazy.
Civil War general.
Exactly. General David Letterman from Indiana.
This was a very good interview. There was a lot of very good information about Barack Obama's lifestyle, about David Letterman's lifestyle, about what they're doing. There was a whole segment
What did you learn?
Well, there was a whole segment where David Letterman talked with John Lewis, who is the senator who was in the march with Martin Luther King and crossing the bridge in Selma. And David Letterman talks to John Lewis, and Barack Obama talks about how John Lewis and all the people of the civil rights movement really influenced this country and really made it possible for President Obama to become president when he did.
Okay. And obviously, Obama is very charming.
Oh, yeah.
And then you also have Letterman's a great interviewer.
They are both very charming.
Okay. Yeah. So this, did you enjoy this?
I enjoyed this very much. I wish that they had made other directorial choices. The the camera work in this is very distracting to me.
Okay.
It is constantly panning across the stage in every shot. It goes from left to right in every shot. Very artistic way of doing things.
Deliberate stylistic choice.
Yeah. Very distracting. I love the David Letterman show. The setup they had at the Ed Sullivan Theater, three cameras, one on the interviewer, one on the interviewee, and then a third camera for the wide shot of both of them.
Mm-hmm.
That worked. Why they chose this style for this is beyond me. It distracted me. It probably won't distract most people. I understand. Most people won't notice this.
Did they have any stupid pet tricks?
No, they didn't. They didn't have stupid pet tricks. They did not have an opening monologue. When Dave came out, he was waving with his two hands like he is apt to do. And I thought, oh, wow, he's going to stand there and do a little opening monologue. No, he did a little opening intro to the fact that Barack Obama was going to come out. But it wasn't anything like a monologue. This was still very good. I do recommend this. I do look forward to every month getting my little Netflix and getting the next interview in this series. I look forward to it almost as much as I scheduled my classes around the Animaniacs in college. The Animaniacs was my college years, and Hulu has all the episodes of the Animaniacs right now, and yes, I sat down and watched, I don't even know how many episodes of the Animaniacs this week, because they just make me happy.
Well, I'm glad they do. Obviously, the Animaniacs, for those who don't know, were an attempt by Steven Spielberg to bring back the Looney Tunes.
The Warner Brothers, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, they did the Tiny Toon Adventures first, and then the Animaniacs, and then the Animaniacs spun off the Pinky and the Brain, and then they did a crossover with Elmira, and Hulu has all of them.
Pinky was Orson Welles.
That's right, the Orson Welles sounding character. The real news here is not that I watched the Animaniacs, because that's pretty standard. The real news is that the Animaniacs are coming back in 2020, which, for those of you who are keeping score, that is 2 years from now. 2 years to 2020.
We've got some kids that will be graduating from high school at that point,
yeah,
Steve.
We've got some college bills that we will be starting to pay, you mean. Yes, yes, we do. There's all sorts of things on Hulu and Netflix for you to watch. You don't necessarily have to go to the movie theater, but this week you might want to go to the movie theater.
This may be the last great big week. In fact, there's something for everyone is what we were talking about. The last big week until we start hitting some blockbusters, a lot smaller release schedule.
Yeah, you'll see that most of the movies on our show notes this week actually say 2017 on them. This is a lot of movies that were released in the year 2017, but were released very narrowly, just enough to get into Oscar consideration. Now they're opening wide this week.
There's a whole bunch of good ones and one that we'll just put a question mark by. Let's start with the first one, Steve.
The first one is called Hostiles. Hostiles. This is Christian Bale in a real Western, like
ding,
epic.
Ding, ding, ding.
Yeah.
This looks really good.
It looks beautifully produced, beautifully shot. I'm sure the acting is fantastic.
1892. And, well, Christian Bale usually picks great projects to work on. And this looks like one that I would be very interested in seeing.
Yeah.
And this is, he's an army captain. He's going to take a Cheyenne chief and his family, and they're going to deliver them.
Yeah. And not Dance with Wolves.
Not Dance with Wolves.
That's a different movie completely.
Well, this looks very interesting. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it's going to be great.
Yeah. The second one really looks like it's going to win a lot of awards. This one's called The Leisure Seeker. It features Donald Sutherland and Dame Helen Mirren. And
Dame, Steve.
Uh-huh.
This is on Golden Pond, but with
the
Winnebago.
21st century, yes. This is the 21st century on Golden Pond. Donald Sutherland's character is suffering from Alzheimer's and is suffering, literally.
He is.
And the story of life, of how we are going to live with this, is very touching.
Well, you can see what a toll it takes on the family.
Mm-hmm.
Because Helen's character keeps trying to remind them of who is this and who is this.
Yeah.
And all you can say is, bring a lot of tissues.
Yeah, we were tearing up just watching the trailer.
There's probably going to be a lot of onions in the audience.
Yes. A little bit of dust in here. A
lot of dust.
Dusty in here.
A lot of dust.
The next movie is called The Phantom Thread. This is Daniel Day-Lewis's final film. He has announced that he is done with acting, and this is Daniel Day-Lewis.
It's a Sony classic, Steve.
Yeah, it's one of those. This is one of those really deep, like, oh, we're going to watch a film now.
This is a foreign film without being foreign.
It's probably great. This is probably a great story. It's about a tailor who's making these beautiful dresses using this wonderful fabric and having these adventures, and it's probably pretty slow in everything that it does.
This is a grown-up film.
This is an adult film. Welcome to NPR. We're going to talk about The Phantom Thread.
So when the people ask, what do you watch as a movie, you have to throw this movie out.
You have to say Phantom Thread.
Of course, you have to say
this is the movie that you watch, because that's how you roll. Absolutely. There's another one called Forever My Girl. This is about a country star returning home and finding out he has a child that he didn't know about.
All right, so this looks like one of the religious films that we've watched without being a religious film.
It is one step above that religious film genre. I like those religious films, don't get me wrong.
Too.
But
I do
this
too.
Is a morality play. This is a story about what we should be doing and why we're not doing the right things all the time.
Definitely designed for the tweens and parents.
Yeah.
In middle America. Yeah. This
it looks
good
though.
Oh yeah, this is for a family film.
Yep. There is an animated film called Mary and the Witch's Flower. This is one of those animated films from Japan, Japanimation.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it looks like the English version that we're going to get is Australian accents.
Yeah, there's some interesting accents in there. But this is the story of a little girl who goes to school to learn to be a witch.
Yeah, this looks like Hogwarts.
Uh-huh.
It definitely looks like Hogwarts. Uh-huh. But it's not Hogwarts. And I just want to say
animated.
But it's the anime version of it. Anyway, I'm sure it's going to be fine.
It looks beautiful. The sound is beautiful. I was listening to the trailer with headphones on, and the sound design in the trailer is fantastic. I'm sure this is going to be a lovely film.
All right, Steve, we're going to mention this next film because Salma Hayek is in it. And also Nicolas Cage.
This
sounds like it's going to be good. It's named Mom and Dad, Steve.
Uh-huh.
So far, this sounds like this is going to be something that we all want to see.
And we played the trailer.
What's the premise, Steve?
And you said out loud while we were playing the trailer, this is my house. This is my life. I have two girls, and I live in this lifestyle.
Steve,
I spoke too soon. The switch was thrown in this trailer, and my God, the idea of this movie is horrific. This is basically a horror movie.
This is where mom and dad go and hunt down their children.
Not just mom and dad. All the moms and all the dads in the town are murdering their children in this film.
Yeah, this looks questionable as why this
questionable
was,
at best.
This was greenlit. But that should, let's just say that
it's
out there.
It is definitely out there. That is for sure. It's jarring. As parents, we very much want to protect our children. The idea of murdering their children in this movie is just bizarre. Go look at this trailer.
All right, we got a couple other movies, Den of Thieves and 12 Strong, that's out there. So there's a lot of movies to see. This is probably the last big week of movie releases, mm-hmm. Probably until the summer.
Yeah, the hibernation season for movies has begun and will continue after this week.
But there's a lot of them for a lot of different demographics. So there you go.
There you go.
Book it, book it, book it. Book it, book it, book it. Book it. Book it.
brings us to our book. At our book of the week, you got a chance to read the 1954 I Am Legend by Richard Matheson.
This was really good.
It is.
I knew I wanted to read something like this.
Okay.
And this is considered one of the pulp classics.
Okay.
And so the premise of it is there is a single survivor, Steve.
Yeah, there was a virus that wiped out humanity except for one guy.
And so he's surrounded by, they're originally described as vampires.
Right, but with all the lore of the Bram Stoker's Dracula vampires, where they are afraid of crucifixes and garlic, and they get wooden stakes through the heart.
All right, so we got that, but they're really kind of zombies. Is really what we learn. And this is about the single guy who's got to board himself up into his house. Mm-hmm. He has to go out to the grocery store to get the canned goods, and he's deciding how many other people are still living.
Mm-hmm.
I could be the only one. And every night they come and they basically
they attack at night. He's able to go out during the day, but he has to get back into his bunker at night because that's when they attack.
And it's a reminder. It's a very survivalist type of urban survivalist.
Right.
He's got a generator to keep the refrigerator running, to keep the stove going, and all this other fun stuff. There's a couple touching parts to it. One, he tries to save a dog, and there's an interaction there.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, there is a part where he runs into another person who he thinks is human. And there's your twist there. Mm-hmm. So there's very much of a Twilight Zone-ish place to it. But this is the seed of the modern zombie film.
I think you are right.
I absolutely enjoyed this. This was a fast read. It certainly didn't take a long time.
Well written. Suspenseful, where you're not quite sure what's going to happen, even though you may have heard this story before. They made this into a movie in 2007.
Well, you know you've heard it before, because have they made like four or five films
based
on this?
There are four or five different movies made from this book. The first one was The Last Man on Earth. This was Vincent Price in the main role in 1964. You may have heard of The Omega Man in 1971.
Charlton Heston.
There you go. There is the same story.
Very sweaty. Very sweaty.
Very sweaty and dirty. It must be the 70s. There, and then there is some evidence that The Night of the Living Dead in 1968 took some of its information from this story from 54.
Sure. You can think of The Walking Dead that's mm-hmm. currently on television today. Zombieland that we've watched, which we really enjoy.
Yeah.
It just seems like there's so many things. You know, Zombieland, one of the scenes in that movie was they have to go to a grocery store.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going through and they're looking for Twinkies or whatever they're looking for. But my point is that a lot of that imagery comes from this book.
Mm-hmm.
I would say it comes from this book.
I agree.
And I really enjoyed it. If you're a young person and you need to write a report or something, this would be a good book to write. It once again, it doesn't take forever to read.
It's a quick read,
but it's definitely there's enough there
mm-hmm.
that you go, oh yeah.
Did you catch when this was set?
No.
This is set in 1976.
Exactly.
Writing in 1954, set in 1976.
The distant future, Steve.
So there are some things that didn't happen in the 1976 reality that we're looking at here in 1954. For instance, he does not mention television as a part of his story. He talks about taking out a projector to watch a movie, because that's the way 1954 would have looked at entertainment.
He did. He was going to take out, you're right, he did.
Mm-hmm.
He also had to go to the library to look things up.
Yes, something that kids today might not understand.
And, he's very human in this.
Mm-hmm.
There's parts where he gets very angry with himself. He breaks a microscope. He has to go get a better one.
Yeah. Because he's studying the science of what happened.
And he's getting it from books. He had to get it from the library.
Yeah.
And, there's just a lot there that's there. It's very primitive in the sense that it gets us, because we like survivalist type stuff at times.
Mm-hmm.
It shows, the resourcefulness of the human experience. And then at the end, obviously, there's the twist that shows us something else.
Of course.
So the mirror is switched on you, baby.
Nice.
The hunter becomes the hunted.
There you go. Do you, okay, so you suggest this book for everybody. And,
oh, yeah.
And you haven't seen the Will Smith movie.
I have not.
I suggest you watch the Will Smith movie. I think you will enjoy it.
I haven't seen The Last Man on Earth. I haven't seen The Omega Man, which I immediately said I should probably see The Omega Man.
Yeah.
And I have not seen the Will Smith movie.
I think you should. I think you would enjoy it. That one is I Am Legend by Richard Matheson. You can find it on our Amazon store, amazon.toomuchscrolling.com. I don't know about you, Chip, but I've been keeping an eye out on all the innovation that has been coming to the stage at the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas this week. That's why Las Vegas has been on my mind.
Vegas, baby.
I love the Consumer Electronics Show. One of my Facebook posts came up and said, hey, remember when you were at the Consumer Electronics Show? And I said, yeah. And it said, yeah, that was 6 years ago, old man. And I went, oh.
Isn't that amazing how quickly time.
6 years ago.
Time flies,
I need to get back there, man. I need to get back there. There's so fun to look at all the new toys, all the new gadgets. My two favorite things from this year's CES were Samsung and Intel. They gave the keynote speeches and they showed us some very interesting things. Samsung is getting to the Internet of Things where we can connect all of our things in our house together, and they're using what they bought, which is called Smart Things, to connect all the information between your refrigerator and your TV and your doorbell and all of your lights. This is an innovation that is going somewhere, I believe.
It's easy to make fun of. Because, I mean, I can't wait for my toaster to be able to talk to my toothbrush. That'll be really, really nice.
The one that bothered me was they had the refrigerator telling the oven to preheat. That one didn't bother me, but then the oven told the dishwasher that something heavy was coming. Like, really? The dishwasher really needs to prepare itself for something sticky? Really?
All right. Well, anyway, it doesn't really matter. The Samsung seems to have presented what could be a smart house.
Yes.
And it's
here.
Yeah, it's basically the technology is coming. And this looks very interesting. One of the real concerns I had initially as we were preparing for this was technology changes so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So what if you bought something that, you know,
for instance, the refrigerator?
Well, your smartphone you replace every 3 or 4 years, right?
So if you got a smart refrigerator, do you have to replace it every 2 or 3 years?
Yeah.
Samsung has thought about this. They do have it modular enough that replacing the brain, the mm-hmm. heart of the computer part, is something that can be done.
How interesting.
Yeah, they have thought of that because, yes, you don't want to buy a refrigerator every 2 or 3 years like you do your smartphone. That's for sure. Not even a smart TV. You don't want to buy one every 2-3 years.
No, nobody wants to buy one every two or 3 years. You want them to last a long time.
Right.
All right, so tell me about Intel, Steve.
Intel has shown us some of their new technology, specifically the TrueView 360 camera system. This is something they've been working on for a very long time.
All right, so we're going to try to explain it to you verbally on something that we should be looking at visually.
Absolutely. You can go to our show notes and click on the presentation where Intel will tell you and show you all about this. But those of you who've seen the movie The Matrix, you remember that this technology started there. A group of cameras around an action, and all of those cameras all recording that action from all sides. Then, taking that data, melding it together, you can look at any piece of that information at any point. What they're doing with this...
Whoa.
Yeah. Heavy. What they're doing with
Keanu,
this...
Keanu, baby.
Yeah.
Whoa.
What they're doing with this is mostly in the sports arena, action, mm-hmm. where mm-hmm. they've put dozens of cameras around a stadium so that they can film a sporting event from every angle and then give you access to see it from any angle, zoomed in as far as you want to go to see it from any perspective.
You see a little bit of it when they do highlights of football games and stuff like, well, mm-hmm. they'll stop and they'll rotate everybody around. It looks very video game-ish.
It does.
It's real life, but...
It's real life made into the pixels that look like a video game. They demonstrated this on stage. Tony Romo came out and said, watch this football play. And they watched it from the perspective of the eyes of the quarterback. And what does the quarterback see from that perspective?
And then they backed it up for the bird eye. It's just incredible.
Stunning.
It's pretty fascinating. future's here.
When you meld that with virtual reality technology, we're going to be watching some of these sporting events from a virtual reality perspective, where we'll be able to go to any piece of it, zoom into any piece of it, and see it in our own home.
And they'll make me a lineman still there too, Steve.
There you go. You can pretend lineman for the county. Intel also gave us something called a neuromorphic computer chip.
All right, so listen to this. Listen to this.
Neuromorphic computing is Intel's attempt to make a computer chip that works like a brain.
There you go.
So that's not pretty frightening at all.
No, but all right. So anyway, Terminator's coming.
Terminator's coming.
All right, but Steve, tell me about how this chip works and how cold it has to be. Tell me a little bit of all that fun stuff.
There's another chip that they're working on called a quantum chip. Quantum computing is here. We are using quantum computers, and Intel rolled out their 49-qubit quantum chip this week.
That doesn't mean anything to everybody.
It means nothing to you. But those of you who remember video games in the 80s, remember playing 8-bit Nintendo?
Yes.
8-bit Mario, where everything was just a block.
Big squares
that you were moving around. That 8-bit went to 16-bit pretty quickly, and then to 32-bit. Then you had the Nintendo 64, which is 64 bits. The video game consoles today are running 256-bit graphics.
And they look great.
They look great. Quantum computing, which we could do a whole show on quantum computing, just please understand, it is not the ones and zeros of computing today. It is both one and zero simultaneously, which is mind-boggling. We're not going into this.
Yeah, this is too much, Steve.
We're not going into this. But the idea of the two bits that quantum computing was last year, mm-hmm. now being 49, goes to the exponential growth that we're seeing in this market. This computer chip can break encryption, any encryption, in nanoseconds.
Oh, that's incredible.
In the right situation.
All right, but tell me a little bit. This is what's interesting. Uh-huh. It runs at such a high temperature.
Uh-huh. You have to keep it super cold. And when I say super cold, I mean 250 times colder than space.
Steve, that's almost as cold as my heart.
That is, he's a good one, Mr. Grinch. But that is so amazingly cold, and
it's so cold you can't even in your mind contemplate how cold that is.
It's so cold.
How cold is it?
That the snowman came in to warm up. But in addition to the cold, you also have to shield this from any form of radiation that is coming into it. Sunlight, heat, anything that goes into this chip will ruin the calculation that's happening.
What is amazing about what you just described is the human mind can't even comprehend it.
Yeah, we are not really able to comprehend this. And the fact that it is exponentially growing, this is going to be the computer of the future, and we're going to be subjugated to it.
All right, so let's take this idea that we cannot really think about,
yes,
and bring it down to something that maybe we can think about.
Yeah, most of you use Google Maps for your travel, mm-hmm. and you know how to get places only because the computer tells you how to get places.
And we were thinking how cool it was a long time ago. You had MapQuest available uh-huh. to you.
And you printed out the paper, and then you had the paper in your hand, and you go, oh, I know how to get there.
That's right. Turn here, turn there. Right. And we went from there to Garmin's and TomToms and things like that.
I've got four of them in the archives down here.
But now, most of us are using our smartphones for that.
Right.
And we plug them into our cars and we put them up on our little mount so we can drive mm-hmm. legally here in Illinois.
Right.
Apple's got their version.
Right.
Google's got their version. Apple got started a lot later than Google did.
Google has a big head start on Apple.
So it's really kind of interesting to see how things have evolved side by side.
Mm-hmm.
And tell me about that.
Google is really doing it and doing it really well. I use Google Maps. I also use Waze, which is another company that Google acquired that mm-hmm. uses those same Google Maps and uses them slightly differently. But I do not have an Apple phone. You have an Apple phone. Mm-hmm. Do you use your Apple Maps instead of Google Maps?
I tend to switch between them. If I had my choice, I end up using Google Maps or Waze.
Hmm.
But I end up using Apple Maps too. Just depending on where I am, and I say, hey, get me to Steve's house or something like that.
And we're seeing so much more resolution on the Google Maps right now. They are doing so much for it. Again, go to our show notes and click on this article and you'll see.
This is, well, it's a blog post. And what they're going through is they're showing that your home, if you had a bay window, you know, it's going to have a little place where the bay window goes out. If you had a little, maybe a house in the back of your home.
A garden shed, maybe?
Sure. That's showing up there now. And it's just amazing on how detailed they're arriving. So when they can, when they're looking to find you, they'll know exactly where you're hiding.
Yeah, this is both exciting and terrifying. There's no doubt about that. That's true of most technology. All of this technology is both exciting and ridiculous and terrifying. All three.
All right, Steve, let's have some fun.
Okay. Good idea. Let's have some fun. Enough of this terrifying stuff. You all know that there's a book called Fire and Fury. It's on the bestseller list. It's on three different bestseller lists.
Pick up a newspaper, watch the news, whatever it is, you will hear about this book.
Yes.
So it's going after Trump. But Steve...
Oh, that Fire and Fury?
Oh, that one, Steve.
Oh, I was talking about the other one. There was a Canadian professor who wrote a book 10 years ago called Fire and Fury. It's on three bestseller lists this week.
Oh, how wonderful.
Because people bought the wrong book.
Well, they get another book, Steve.
I'm sure it's a great book.
The Allied Bombing of Germany, 1942 to 1945.
Yeah, I'm sure it's a fantastic read. Everybody should be ordering it from Amazon because apparently they are.
He's a best-selling author now.
And he's so proud of it. He's so proud of being a best-selling author. He knows that most people ordered it accidentally, and he's being a good sport about it. But hey.
Lots of interviews.
Hey, you're on the bestseller list. Take it.
Steve, Cleveland always seems to have something fun going. There's nothing about Taco Bell in Cleveland this year.
Taco Bell story yet.
But the Cleveland,
it's still early.
The Cleveland Pine Dealer has given us another fun article. And this one has to do with mail delivery, Steve.
Yeah, it's hard to deliver the mail because, you know, neither rain nor sleet nor dark of night will keep a mail carrier from his appointed rounds. But wild turkeys...
Aggressive wild turkeys, Steve.
They might keep the mail from being delivered. That's what's happening in Ohio.
In Rocky River, Ohio. the turkeys are quite aggressive.
Yeah.
They're attacking the mail carriers. And the mail department is trying to figure out, or the post delivery group is trying to figure out ways of working around this, delivering at night.
They're delivering at night. This is right back to your I Am Legend story about the zombies attacking at night, and so you can only do your work during the day. The turkeys are attacking during the day, so you have to go out at night.
Unsafe conditions, Steve.
Turkeys are vicious.
Are they?
Wild, yeah. Go look at some of this footage. Wild turkeys can really do some damage. They should maybe have been the national bird.
Well, as long as the Canada geese don't turn against us, Steve, we're going to be fine.
Man, the birdemic is certainly on its way. We are on our way. Man, watch out. Watch out, everyone. There's killer computers, zombies, and turkeys.
Wild turkeys. And it's cold outside.
Are they jive turkeys?
They're jive turkeys.
I don't know, Chip. I think we have enough information to survive another week at least. What do you think?
Only if we can come back next week.
Absolutely. If you need more information, give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-4104-TMS. Our website is TooMuchScrolling.com. Our email is TooMuchScrolling@gmail.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We're on iTunes and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. And every day of the week, you can go to our news site, news.TooMuchScrolling.com, and find all the news that you need. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
And I'm the Snowman.
We'll see you in the future.